Megan, you know what I love about our partner, the Essential Calendar? I love the product so much, of course, but I also love that it comes from a small business founded by two moms.
Right, just like us. Listeners, if you're drowning in details right now, like summer camps, travel plans, end of school year mayhem, give yourself the gift of the Essential Calendar, a seasonal, at-a-glance, poster-sized calendar for your wall. Get 10% off your order at theessentialcalendar.com/themomhour. That's 10% off at theessentialcalendar.com/themomhour.
Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Megan.
We're two moms with 8 kids between us, from little to grown.
We're in different areas of the country and in different stages of life.
But we both know that motherhood's a lot easier when real moms share tips and encouragement.
And remind you that it's really all going to be okay.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour.
Hey everyone, and welcome to episode 211 of the Mom Hour. I am Sarah Powers, here as always with Megan Francis. Hey Megan.
Hey Sarah.
You ready to take some more listener questions?
It's my favorite time of the quarter.
So last week we took 4 of your listener questions, and as we prepared for this one, we actually saw a theme emerge, specifically in our Facebook group. People had a lot of questions about vacation. We are recording this right at the precipice of summer. People are looking ahead. But even if you're listening to this other times a year, you know, the holidays bring up a lot of travel questions. So we actually are making today's episode vacation and travel themed listener questions. I'm excited.
Me too. It's one of my favorite topics.
Yes, me too. So all of these came from members of our Facebook group. And if you guys are curious about how that works and are interested in joining our Facebook group, we will link up in the show notes how to do that. But it's such a supportive community and I love seeing people give each other advice. And so all the questions you'll hear today came from that group. And so we so appreciate, especially when I say, hey, can you record your voice and send that in? And they do it. So thank you guys.
Yes, I love that too. We really prefer to hear your voices. We really want to hear you guys talk. It adds a lot.
I'm getting kind of bold. I just ask people to do it now. People will email in a great question. I'm like, well, this is great, but could you record it in your own voice?
Sarah, we both know this time of year can be crazy. So this is a great time to get ahead with no prep, no mess meals from our sponsor, Factor. I love how these meals are ready to eat and delivered right to your door. I mean, you can't beat that convenience, but most importantly, they're seriously delicious.
Yeah, Megan, I agree. Our whole family was impressed with the quality and flavor of Factor meals we tried. And it turned out to be a great option for my teenagers when they got home late from a theater practice or came home from school super hungry. There's zero prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Factor meals just need to be heated for about 2 minutes and they're ready to go.
Yeah, and for any listeners with wellness goals this month, Factor has 6 menu preferences to support your lifestyle, whether you're trying to boost your protein, avoiding meat, or simply focusing on well-balanced meals. And you can pause or reschedule deliveries to fit your lifestyle.
Make today the day you kickstart a new healthy routine. Head to factormeals.com/momhour50 and use code MOMHOUR50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code MOMHOUR50 at factormeals.com/momhour50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
We are welcoming back Vionic as a sponsor today. And Sarah, I will be honest. I was sorting through my warmer weather wardrobe the other day and it could seriously use a refresh. But you know what's good to go? My shoes. I've got a great selection to choose from thanks to the Vionic Vitals collection. And lately, the pair I keep putting on again and again is the Uptown Loafer. I have 2 pairs, one in sand suede and the other in camel leather. But please don't make me pick a favorite.
Oh, I won't. I'll let you keep both. That's so funny, Megan, because I was a little jealous of your Uptown Loafers. I was the last one on our team to get a pair, but I just did. I also got mine in the sand suede, and I think I've worn them like 4 times this week. They really finish off a cute spring outfit. The Vionic Vitals collection has the best essential styles for everyday wear to get you ready for spring. And no matter what shoes you choose, you'll be on the go in comfort because every single pair of Vionic shoes delivers their trademark VioMotion technology for a difference you can feel. Vionic sandals, sneakers, and flats all offer incredible support, stability, and cushioning, and every pair comes with a 30-day risk-free trial, so it's easy to try them out.
Use code THEMOMHOUR15 at checkout for 15% off your entire order at vionicshoes.com when you log into your account. That's a one-time use only. Vionic shoes. Wearable well-being for your feet.
Okay, our first question comes from Jesse. I love this question. It has to do with kind of family culture, and which is one of my favorite topics, but more specifically vacation. So we will listen to Jesse's question and then come back and answer.
Hey, Megan and Sarah, this is Jesse. I'm a longtime listener. I'm wondering how you both established a vacation culture in your families and maybe how it has or hasn't changed over the years. What I mean by that is, how did you decide as a family that you would maybe always go to the same place year after year, or whether you'd switch it up from year to year, or maybe vacations are just always about visiting family and not necessarily even going someplace super fun or exciting? Is that something that you planned for, or did it just happen organically? For example, growing up, my family vacations were always to the Outer Banks and Kelowna Williamsburg. And that was great because we had our favorite restaurants and our favorite beach spots. And it was really special to go back to the same places over and over. But that also means I've never been to Disney World or the Grand Canyon. So I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts or advice on that. Thanks for all you do. Bye.
Okay, Jesse. So I just have to say, I love that you're asking this question, because I know that there, you know, you're speaking to two things. First of all, establishing the family culture around a vacation, and then like, then what that restricts from you, like what then you can't do. So there's some tension there. I personally am one of those people who romanticizes the idea of a family going back to the same place every year, over and over and over. I feel like that's kind of one of those longstanding traditions that is getting lost in a way. I know, like, among, when I was a kid, I feel like it was common for a while and then became less common, and maybe is becoming more common again. I don't know, Sarah, what is your take on that?
Yeah, I, first of all, I love this question too. I feel like Jesse, she says she's a longtime listener. She must know us, because these are the types of things we love to talk about. What does it mean to have a family culture around vacations? It made this question made me think. You know, I don't know if I've noticed trends so much as what I notice in our community is people having family spread out and having multiple step families and large interwoven connected and kind of complicated families. And so many of the questions we're going to answer today really come back to this, like, what is your immediate family, the family you're raising, and the priorities there. And then this extended web. And I know for me growing up, where we went, whether it was repeat or something new, it often had to do with where the extended family was. And
where
then
that's how
my own kids are experiencing it. So I don't know. There's a lot there.
So what I've noticed, and this is purely anecdotal, which could have a lot to do with where I live. I think it has actually quite a bit to do with where I live. But when I was growing up, there was definitely like the idea of taking like your Michigan vacation, where you'd go to this resort every single year, or you'd go to this, like, these same cabins every single year. And people really did that. And then I think like, in the 90s, maybe, it became more of the thing to like take your family individually on fancier vacations. Mm. So like Disney World or a cruise or to the Bahamas or whatever, like stuff that I didn't see really happening around me when I was a kid, like in the late 90s, early 2000s started to be more of a thing. Now, that could just be because I was exposed to different people in that time of my life than I had been growing up. But I feel like there's kind of like a, like people are trying to get back to that. So I guess what I would say is, first of all, it doesn't have to be one or the other. It could be both. Mm-hmm. But I think that if you're going to, like, I always think of it as, if I choose to do one thing, what am I not doing by doing that thing? So if my vacation is always, you know, going to be centered around extended family, and since I have an enormous extended family, that is just easy for me and usually affordable and just simple and satisfying in a way that I like vacations to be, that might mean that only, you know, every 5 years, or like we went to the Grand, not the Grand Canyon. She said the Grand Canyon. Sorry. We went to Yellowstone. We did that once when Jacob was 18 years old. Like, and it took us that long to get there because it just wasn't something that was a priority for us. So it's not that you can never do those big ones. I just think there's always a trade-off. So it is kind of about your family's culture, about your family's, like, what are your priorities, your budget. And then also keeping in mind as well, as the kids get older, there might opportunities to do some of those things might come up in a different way.
Yeah.
That aren't, you know, like, just because you don't go to Disney World when they're 3, 5, and 7 doesn't mean you'll never go.
Yeah.
So sorry. I feel like I'm rambling.
No, actually you kind of helped me set up for how I wanted to talk about this. It reminds me of when we talk about
holiday traditions changing over time. So I have a couple of things to say about the way kids remember stuff. Just as a reminder, they don't remember anything till they're like five. So you have some time, first of all, to figure this out. And those vacations in the little years, we're going to talk about this more with other questions, but they're hard. So if you're in the little years, just give yourself a pass and do whatever's easiest or whatever you have to do. You maybe have like a whole bunch of family weddings in this time of your life. Like you have time. The kids aren't going to start to remember what they do every year for until they're, you know, grade school age. It's funny. My parents had a place in Tahoe for a few years that they thought might be like, this is the place we go every summer. They shared it with another family. Variety of reasons ended up selling it. And my kids were just at the age where they had remembered going there. And it's a magical place. Megan, you and I almost wanted to go there for a retreat. It's so beautiful. And my kids, like, I mean, they cried. They were heartbroken.
I almost cried when it went away.
I totally understand why my parents sold it. And in fact, we go to their home in Santa Barbara all the time. And that's our repeat place. But it was the timing was funny because my kids were like, 6 and 8 and the older two, and they had enough summers that they remembered and they were like, we're not going there anymore. So that's kind of funny. So number one, you have time to kind of figure out what it is. And number two, like you were saying, the thing that you feel like happened every year as a kid, we've talked about this with the holidays. It maybe didn't happen every year. It maybe happened every other year or a few times. It still will have that feeling of familiarity. So I like what you're saying about it can be both. We do Rhode Island every other year. It's really far. It's really expensive, but I'm only, 11 years into motherhood. It already has a very established pattern and we go back to the same places and it's only every 2 years, which is a long time in between, but we're already building that repeat culture and I love it. And then we've had one-off things too. We're doing San Francisco this summer, just the five of us. And that will be a one-off. We're not going to do that kind of thing every year. So I like both too, I think.
Yeah. And I think too, like, what you said about kids not remembering anything till they're five and remembering things. Kids remember things wrong.
Yeah.
They don't. And they typically remember things through a much rosier lens than maybe actually. Like, I will say I went on a fantastic vacation the summer that my dad and stepmom were divorcing. And now that I look back, I'm like, oh, my dad didn't go on that vacation with us. I didn't even notice because I was having so much fun. I think that like now looking like later, I'm kind of like piecing it all together.
Yeah.
But at the time I was like, oh, we're camping at this cool amusement park thing. Like, and it was really, really fun. So just kind of like when we moved into this house about a little over a year ago, my kids loved the new house. They're like, oh, it's so like clean and new and we love it. It's so amazing. And now all they talk about is the old house and how great it was.
Right.
So just like they're always going to be skewed. I really think it's fine to get the kids' input, but really the parents are the ones who have to pay for it, organize it, logistically make it happen, and all those things. So I just like we talk about how you set the tone in your house. Mm-hmm. I think you can set the tone, you and your partner can set the tone for vacation culture. Maybe it is like when you have a little extra jingle in your pocket and maybe some extra time, you go on that fancy thing once every 5 years.
Right. Well, and one more thought just on vacation culture. I think it could be more than just where you go and at what frequency. I think I'm having so much fun with the ages my kids are now because they're so much easier to travel with. We traveled so much when they were tiny and it was so hard. And I'm still in this phase where it's almost a delight that it's so easy. And I'm just noticing the ways we travel together, the ways we stay in a hotel room, that we are developing a family culture of traveling together, regardless of where we're going. And that will start to feel like this is how the Powers family is on the road. Like, I think I've told the story about how Allegra one time in the airport, she goes, oh, I get it. In the airport, daddy's in charge. Meaning that
I love it.
In the rest of life, all other things, mom's in charge. But oh, I get it. Yeah, dad's in charge. So those little things will start to just emerge. And you are building your culture, your family culture around vacations, even as you figure out where to go.
And then one day, Sarah, your kids will all be old enough to be in their own hotel room.
Oh, yeah.
And it'll change again.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Okay.
Well, I hope we answered that question for you. I feel like we could do like a whole episode or write a book on that or something. So,
I love that question. And Jesse, my guess is that if you're even thinking of it or thinking about it, you're already kind of doing it. That's what I think about
being intentional. You're already probably more thoughtful than most. Yeah. And intentional. Yep.
I love it. Okay. So we are going to next hear from Lindsay, who is from down here in Southern California. And she's got a very good, almost controversial question. And actually this relates to family culture. So let's listen.
Hi, Megan and Sarah. This is Lindsay from California. and I'm wondering how you feel about taking your kids out of school for a family vacation. Currently, my daughter is in preschool, and we are trying to take advantage of being able to travel any time of the year that we want right now. Once she is in elementary school, my husband and I don't plan to take vacations that would require her to miss school. But it seems like it's very common for a family to go on vacation during the school year and just take the kids out of school for a week. When I was growing up, it was rare for someone to miss school for a family vacation, but it seems like this has changed over the years. I'm curious to hear your thoughts and how your families have handled this.
Okay, so I think that we both have an opinion about this, Sarah. I want to point out one thing that I think is so interesting that Lindsay said, and that I think illustrates the difference depending on, like, in perception, depending on where you live or maybe some other factors, is that she said she thought it was common, less common when she was growing up for people to miss school for a family vacation, and now it seems more. In my life, I feel like it's flip-flopped. I felt like people were very casual about missing school for vacation when I was a kid, and now it's become harder.
I think
what's your thought?
I agree with you, actually. Yeah. And I think if I'm remembering where Lindsay's from, I think she's from not that far from me, like Orange County or LA County. So she and I are from the same general area, and I also grew up in California. I'm not sure if it's a huge change, but if I had to pick, I think I would agree with you, which is I think I remember it more as a kid. I know my parents took us out for a while we would go skiing up in Oregon with family friends and would take us out for a week. I remember doing homework.
What is
the question she is asking? What are our thoughts on this? My thoughts are I lean toward not doing it very often and reserving it only for when it really makes the most possible sense. And so far, we have never done it for a long vacation. That's not to say I wouldn't. Mm-hmm. In particular, if my kids were gaining an experience that I felt was equal to or even better than school in some kind of a cultural or enriching way. I mean, if it was a vacation we could do any time of year to go sit on a beach or go on a cruise, I would feel a little bad about that. I think there'd have to be a really good reason. But if I had an opportunity to take my kids to London or to the Ashland Shakespeare Festival or something where I felt like it was a cultural thing as a family that was going to be almost like road schooling or homeschooling, I'm not saying I wouldn't do it. It hasn't come up. The times I've done it, and I will just confess here, have been a one day to Disney to beat the crowds. I have done that, but mm-hmm. one day, not a week. And Allegra, we took her to DC. And again, we went to all the museums. So I guess I don't come down hard and fast one way or the other. We do have families at our school who will take an entire week for skiing. Yeah. And the kids do independent study, which means the schools get funded. I don't think teachers like it. I do think there's people who look down on it. But I don't know that I have, like, I can't come down firmly in either camp. How about you?
I'm going to tread really lightly here. So the reason I asked if you felt like it was different when we were growing up is because the world I came from, I belonged to my parents, and I remember having and they would decide. They were the deciders, yeah. right? And I remember having fights with my dad because there was some important family thing going on and I was in a sport and I had to miss the sport or whatever it was. Like, that was like a head-to-head battle that mm-hmm. we would have sometimes about these things. And his stance was like, sorry, family first, school is second. It's important, or school or whatever activities you signed on for are secondary. And this is just, that's just the way it is. And like, it would never have occurred to either my mom or my dad to feel even a little bit bad right. about any of this.
Like, they were just in charge
generationally. Yeah. It was a different thing. School was different then. There was more opportunity to take kids out. I think, there were fewer days of the year that we were in school. And I think it was more common. Like, I lived in a place where kids took off for deer hunting season. They'd be gone. I mean, half the school would clear out for like, I don't know, the better part of a week. There'd be nobody there. Now, that wasn't an official school vacation, but it was kind of like allowed. Or people would add on, you know, an extra day on either side of a 3-day weekend or whatever. So that's where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
Then I come into this world where things are really different. Like, I think that the importance we put on, for many, many reasons, the importance we put on having kids in school as much as humanly possible has increased because the teachers are under more pressure. The schools are under more pressure. Like, everybody's just under more pressure to pack more in to less time. Mm-hmm. And I waver really hard between respecting that and saying, that's not my problem.
Yeah.
So
No, I
like, do you understand? So it's not like I don't want to disrespect anybody, but I also don't want to be disrespected because I make a choice for my family either. I've talked to teachers all over the place on this. Like, I've talked to some who really don't care as long as you give them adequate notice, and help your kid in some way stay on top of things while they're gone. I've had some that are like, well, you know, we have to be here, so you should too, basically. Like, that's the attitude. And I'm like, well, there's a reason I'm not a teacher. So I guess my...
No, sorry, I'm going to interrupt real quick. I know we've talked about this, but I can't remember what you said. In Michigan, do the schools get paid when the butts are not in seats? So our schools don't get money when the kids aren't there.
As long as... And on the count day, there's... So there's like a count day, I think twice a year.
Oh, really?
And they come in and literally count the kids.
Oh, that's very
and
different.
Yes. And everybody knows. So everybody knows when the count days are. Like they like tell you, like, it's the count day. It's really important. Don't have this be the day you blow off.
You go to Disneyland.
You go to Disneyland. Yeah. And no, I wouldn't miss a count day if I could miss it or if I could help it. And then I think they average it out.
Okay.
Like, you know, if it happened to be a day where there was like a flu epidemic, they'd probably reschedule, but it's kind of an average. Like, they look at that and go, okay, well, this is about what we can expect to see on a typical Tuesday.
So ours is day by day from the way I understand it, which is why
it's really interesting.
And excused absences are really important for that reason. And then it's really important to go on independent study if you're going to miss more than 2 days for any reason. And they, you know, that includes a vacation. If you're going to do it, then you can, you know, submit a little bit of paperwork for independent study and the schools get funded. So I know our school.
Yeah, that's very different. I don't even think we don't have a thing called independent study. That's not a thing.
Yeah.
It's literally you go to the teacher and say, do you have work my kid can do? And they say, sure.
It feels a little silly, to be honest, when it's 2 days. I've done it for 2 days before. But I've done it because I want my school to get money. I don't want to. Yeah. I understand it's a little thing we can do so that that absence shows up as independent study and they get funded for that day. But it almost I wonder if it creates more work for the teacher because it feels like then the teacher, I don't care if my kid misses 2 days and my kids really have really good attendance. So we don't have a chronic illness or anything where I wouldn't mind them just missing the 2 days, but I usually do the independent study because I'm a one and it feels like the thing I'm supposed to do.
I
do think from a funding perspective, it helps. But then in the back of my mind, I'm always like, I could have just created a bunch more administrative work for the teacher, which I feel bad about. So I don't know.
Well, and I'll tell you, like, for myself, well, first of all, I bet you when they make their budgets, they probably take into account that people are going to miss school. Right. So you want them to get the money, but like, it's not like you're personally blowing the school's budget. If you choose not to do, like, that's just a fact of life. Just like I owned a store, I would, you know, count on there being slow days. It's just, that's business. And that, I know school's not a business, but like, that's how budgets, I'm assuming, are set. That is a very different thing. But I've only taken my kids out of school for vacation, I think a total of 3 times or 4. I can't remember which it was. And it was because every other year we used to go to Florida. John's mom has a place down there. And so every other year, the week of conferences, because then there would be 2 half days. We would take them out for 4 days and we'd go down to Florida. We would visit his mom. We would go to Disney or whatever. And then we would come back. Now, was it cold? Like, could I argue that I could have gone to Disney World at spring break when literally everybody else does and it costs more to fly there? I guess I could have. I could have gone in the summer when it's miserably hot and everybody else is there, but I just didn't. Like, it was fine. It was okay. Like, I was okay with that. One time, I really feel like I boned it. The first time I went, I was so busy pulling together all the schedules and everything else that I forgot to notify. I can't remember whose teacher it was, but like, there was one teacher I just totally forgot to tell. Like, didn't tell her ahead of time. I don't even think I called the kids in because I thought it was taken care of.
Right.
And that was like, oh man, I really screwed that up. So that's on me. That was a boneheaded move and totally my bad. But every other time, I would let everyone know ahead of time and like, if they had homework, I would make sure they did it. But most of the time the teachers was like, you know what? It's conference week. It's going to be slow week anyway. Just go have fun. And usually they were very laid back about it. So
I would agree. I've had teachers say, you know, these experiences and family times are worth it. I think we've talked about this when it comes to school, when teachers see a general effort toward partnership and doing the best thing for your kid and their education, that those are brownie points you kind of build up over time.
Yeah, so it's that like social capital, like, right?
Yeah. If you kind of sheepishly, I'm like, and we're going to Disney on Friday.
Right,
they're like,
exactly.
Go have fun. Yeah. That's been my experience. If it's something that you recklessly abused, they probably feel a little resentful, just like anything else.
And if you are making an effort to make sure that your kid's not the one who screws everything up when he gets back, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, if you're making an effort to make sure that you're not causing a problem for that teacher, it might be a bit of an inconvenience, and that sucks. I mean, and I do feel bad about that, but life is full of inconveniences. I don't think, you know, I've just seen so many attitudes. Teachers are human, which means I agree with many and I don't agree with some, right? And I think many of them have fantastic attitudes and some have stinky attitudes. And I have gotten the gamut on this topic. And I would say 95% of them have been positions I can go, yeah, I see what you're saying. I totally get that. And then 5%, they're grumpy about it just to be grumpy about it. And that's unfortunate, but there's nothing I can do.
Yeah.
So maybe I didn't tread as lightly as I meant to, because you guys know we love teachers, but.
Did you mean to tread lightly there? I'd totally forgotten that.
I had meant to at the beginning, but I forgot.
Again, I will say to Lindsay what I said to Jesse, which is the fact that you're going into this while your daughter's in preschool, thinking about it conscientiously and thinking, okay, travel's going to look different for us once she's in school full time. That's 100% true. I hope no one listened to the last 10 minutes and think Megan and Sarah just pull their kids out of school all the time. You've done it 3 or 4 times in 18 years of school parenting. And I've done it like twice for a Disney day and 2 days for a Washington, D.C. trip. So I think just knowing that it is something to consider, but you and I are somewhere in the messy middle, as we usually are.
We are welcoming back Ritual as a sponsor today. Megan, we both try to make healthy choices, but you know, sometimes it's tricky to sort through fact and fiction when it comes to supplements and vitamins to figure out just what they're doing for us. That's why I'm glad Ritual keeps studying their products and sharing the results, especially as it relates to women, since women are the focus of all Ritual's products, including the Essential for Women 18 Plus Multivitamin.
And the results are super reassuring. Just as an example, Ritual conducted a university-led clinical trial for their Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin, and it was shown to increase vitamin D levels by 43% and omega-3 DHA levels by 41% in just 12 weeks. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin is made with high-quality and traceable key nutrients in clean, bioavailable forms with 9 key nutrients in 2 capsules per day. Plus, they are leading the industry when it comes to sustainability. They use lower carbon packaging and prioritize sustainably sourced ingredients. That kind of thoughtfulness really matters to me.
No more shady business. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus is a multivitamin you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/themomhour. Start Ritual or add the Essential for Women 18 Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/themomhour for 25% off.
Sarah, we're welcoming our sponsor, Element. That's spelled L-M-N-T, a zero-sugar electrolyte drink that leans on current science about what our bodies really need in order to deliver the most effective hydration possible. You know, Sarah, Eric is really into keeping up with health research, and he's been insisting to me for years that we actually need more salt to stay hydrated. Turns out Element agrees, because they've developed their product based on a growing body of research that shows that for optimal health outcomes, we actually need to be taking in sodium levels at 2 to 3 times government recommendations. That's a big difference.
Yeah, it really is, Megan. And, you know, electrolyte deficiency or imbalances can cause headaches, cramps, fatigue, brain fog, and weakness. I know I can feel really rotten when I'm dehydrated. And also, I don't love the taste of plain water, so I'm not that great about drinking it. Element makes a huge difference in how much I'm enjoying my hydration and in how I feel, and it's super easy to fit it into my daily routine. My favorite flavor of Element is the grapefruit, but if that's not for you, we're going to get you set up with a variety pack so you can find your favorite Element flavor. Plus, Element has a no-questions-asked refund policy. You don't even have to send the product back to get your refund.
Yeah, you can receive a free Element sample pack containing 1 packet of 8 flavors. So you'll get 8 total packets free with any order when you purchase through our custom URL. That's drinkelement.com/momhour, DRINKLMNT/momhour. This offer is available exclusively through our partnership, and it's available for both new and returning customers. To get that offer, again, go to drinkelement.com/momhour.
Okay, Sarah, I have a feeling you are going to have a lot to say about this next question, because it has to do with one of your very favorite topics, sleep.
Putting babies in closets?
Was that a spoiler? No. Cribs, right? you put the crib in the closet, right? You don't just throw a baby in a closet. Okay, so let's listen to this question from Lindsay.
Hi, Sarah and Megan. This is Lindsay from the northwest suburbs of Chicago. My question is about getting babies, well, a young toddler really, to sleep while traveling and on vacation. My daughter is 18 months, and over the course of the summer, we'll be going on 3 separate one-week trips. And I have to say, how she's going to nap and sleep is the number one thing that's stressing me out right now. She has been gently sleep trained, so right now she falls asleep independently both for her nap and at night. But it's pretty much always in her crib, in her bedroom, at our house. So I just don't know what to do when we're in a different environment. Do I, you know, try to follow the same routine and try to get her to fall asleep independently? Or do I just throw the whole routine out the window and do something completely different and just try to get her to sleep any way I can? Any tips, tricks, suggestions, or advice you have would be much appreciated, because we all know that a well-rested toddler is essential to a good vacation.
Okay, here we go. I obsessed over sleep when traveling when my kids were toddlers. Probably too much looking back, but that was the mom that I was. And I think if I could boil Lindsay's question down to one thing is, do you stick with the routine from home if you're very regimented at home, or do you just go with the flow? And I think my answer, what worked for me, is somewhere in the middle. I think, especially now with the benefit of hindsight, what really worked is, number one, being really aligned with my partner. Everything was easier when we had some kind of a game plan that we were both had buy-in on. And there were times when I probably was way overly rigid about structure and schedules and sleep. And my partner was probably like, why are we going home in the middle of the day for a nap? Couldn't the baby just sleep in a stroller? And I'm sure we had some times when we were not as aligned, but everything is so hard when you travel with really little kids that getting on the same page and having some sort of a plan with your partner, I think, is huge. In terms of routine, like the actual putting a baby down to bed, I never found that I could replicate what we had at home. I remember trying, like I remember doing sink baths and things, because I thought a bath had to be, if we did a bath at home, how would she ever know how to go to sleep without a bath? On the road. And I gave that up pretty quickly. And same with the number of books, or how we sat and nursed, or how we read stories together. You don't have a rocking chair. Are we sitting in a bed? Are we, like, all of that kind of stuff. I think I let the trappings of that part of the routine, I let go pretty early. But the things I would hold on to were a relative bedtime. You know, trying to not let a kid who goes to bed at 7 every night just stay up till 10:30 or 11. I think if you do that, you'd be surprised. Some kids could just go and go and go. And maybe you'll pay for it the next day, and maybe not. Some kids are more sleep resilient than you think. I often think that those of us moms who don't give kids very many opportunities to be off schedule, we never know. We might actually have a super flexible kid, but we'll never know, because we keep them on schedule. Where Megan, I bet when you look back, you can think of the kids who did really well just going with the flow, and the other ones who needed more of that structure. So I did stick with, and I really stuck with naps, for better or for worse. And for worse, I mean, I probably made myself and everyone around me crazy. That's the downside. But I made sure that toddlers got naps. But the later it got, when I remember my third kid, my third baby, when she was 2, was summertime. And kind of laughing, because by that time the nap was in a different place every single day. It was on somebody's couch one day. It was in the car several times. It was in the ergo carrier on me. And I remember thinking, like, hey, even I've come a little bit of a long way, rather than stopping whatever we're doing and going back for a nap. But yes, I kept structure, but I didn't keep it down to the letter of, how do you even call that? Like the rituals.
Like the detail, yes, the rituals. The details of the rituals too. Like it sounded like you kept some of the ritual, but you let the details go.
I think I did. And I think the thing that's most familiar to a toddler is her parents and the people around her. So I think you'd be surprised at the flexibility about, you know, this bed versus that bed. Some are more sensitive than others. I don't know. I'm going to let you talk for a little bit. I'm sure you have things to say.
Because I was so different. Looking back, you're right. I can look at, like, there were 3 of my kids who did pretty much fine wherever we were, and 2 that I probably should have been more careful about sticking to a routine. Some kind of routine. The nap part was important. So, but what I think is really interesting about this now, this is just me going on a tangent, but now that they're older, I can see how those tendencies have played out. Like William was so relaxed, but he was very routine oriented. The thing is, he would just do it for himself.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, if I didn't do it for him, he was the kid who would go find a chair and a blanket and, like, climb under it and put himself to bed.
Aww.
And that's still how he is. Whereas, like, Owen really needs structure around him to make it happen. So they all need it, right? They all need a routine. They all need sleep, and they all need routines and predictable stuff. But some kids are pretty good at kind of, like, creating it for themselves, finding a place to go be alone if they need to or whatever. And some kids really have to be.
Yeah.
And it's no surprise that Owen and Isaac were my most intense toddlers and were also the ones who really needed, like, outside structure to make that happen. They weren't going to do it for themselves.
Yeah.
And it's interesting now to see Isaac has set his life up to be very structured, like, for him. Yeah. Like, I think he knows on some innate level that that helps him.
Yeah.
Like, having routines, and he's, like, almost set up his life to be that way.
That is so interesting.
It is interesting.
I want to talk about something Lindsay mentioned specifically, in that she sleep trained her daughter at home, which means her daughter knows how to fall asleep independently without being rocked or nursed. Mm-hmm. And that's my interpretation. And should she stick with that on the road with an 18-month-old? And I have to say that I was that person, and I tried to stick with it in the early years. And I have some regrets about that, to be honest. I have a few memories of letting an older baby, not quite an 18-month-old, but letting babies fuss themselves to sleep when I knew they were having trouble because they were in a different environment. And in my mind, it was like, if I picked them up and rocked them to sleep, all the hard work we'd done, all of the structure I'd put in place, all of the skills they'd gained about self-soothing would go away forever.
Yeah.
And looking back, I think for me, not what Lindsay should do, but for me, the mom that I was, I wish I would have just picked up that baby and rocked them to sleep. They find that when you get home, it takes a little while, like a couple days, but they get back to their good habits, just like we do.
And it would take anyway. No, even if you do it perfectly when you're on vacation, no matter what, you're going to have a transition when you get back.
Yes.
Because things are different, and they've been jacked up for days. Like, they're every little thing in their neurons and their brains are, like, firing completely differently when you're on vacation. So regardless, it's not like if you get back and they're a little off that you screwed up.
No, not at all. And I think some of us have a tendency to think about sleep training as, like, the prevention of bad habits. I know I was like that. Like, I want to prevent a kid who won't sleep on their own. I want to prevent a kid who, you know, needs me to always soothe them. But really, sleep is about creating good, healthy habits. And I think most sleep experts would tell you that. And the good habits you've put in place will not get erased by vacation, just like the way you eat on vacation. If I ate the way I eat on vacation and drank all the time, it wouldn't be a good thing. But I know how to reset when I come home. And the good habits you put in place will be there. So while you have to figure out how much of that to keep while on the road, I guess for myself, I look back and think I could have just bent all the rules and rocked those babies to sleep, or let them sleep in our bed with us. By Violet, we did. But it took me a couple kids, and I probably, you know, sat there listening to my baby cry themselves to sleep in times when I should have just been enjoying my vacation.
Yeah, you should have been on vacation. Yeah. And I guess to the point about sleep experts, I think that in general, any expert, but especially I see this with sleep training, is that there's very different philosophies about this. And some really do almost set up the mom and baby as adversaries. Because it is that, like, you're trying to, like, banish the devil out of your baby. And the devil is bad sleep habits. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like what you said. And you can, it becomes pretty clear. Like, if you're reading a book and it makes a baby not sleeping well sound like a punishment, or like a fate that you are,
or something to be feared for the future. Like, you're going to ruin them for life. That's another thing I think
that's probably a good sign that maybe that book is going to stress you out and isn't the dynamic you need to be setting up around it.
Agreed.
In general,
I will offer one more practical tip, and that is white noise. White noise is your friend for blocking out other. And also, I think it helped me relax because I knew the baby couldn't hear what else was going on, whether we were in a little house or a hotel room. And now the white noise can be like an app on your phone. I used to like carry around a white noise machine. So that, and like a familiar blanket from home, those types of things I do think help kind of create some of the same familiarity and also help you relax. But also, it's just going to be different than it was at home. And it might be real bad for a few days, but you figure out
Once you've had a couple of really bad nights of sleep, you will know the adjustments you need to make. Maybe it's going back to more structure, or maybe it's throwing all the structure out the window and letting her sleep with you for a week and trusting that you'll get back on track. So you'll know.
I have one, tip for people who are listening whose baby or toddlers aren't super sleep trained. Mm-hmm. If you're going to go on vacation, because when you do that, then you kind of have to make a choice. You either are carting them around everywhere. We had a very relaxed approach to like routines and stuff. So at home it worked anyway, because like I was usually like, I didn't have anything else going on. Mm-hmm. At home it was no big deal if I put the baby down and it took a little longer, or, you know, like they wanted to sleep someplace else. Like it just wasn't a big deal. On vacation, it's a bigger deal. You might not be able to find a safe place for them to sleep. Like there's all these things that happen.
They're closer quarters with siblings and all that.
Exactly. So often what would happen is that I would be the person who would be rocking the baby to sleep, laying down with the baby, nursing, whatever it was. And one thing I didn't learn until pretty late in the game was to make that experience pleasant for me, mm-hmm. so that it didn't feel like I was doing that. Like I'm patting your back, but freaking go to sleep. Because I really want to get back to my vacation. When I decided to like have a book that I really liked, mm-hmm. or something to listen, like a podcast to listen to, a glass of wine, whatever it was that put me like where I was still in vacation mode, even though I happened to be in this bedroom rocking this baby right now, it just made me more relaxed. And a relaxed mom means baby falls asleep. Babies know, toddlers know, if you're waiting on edge for them to go to sleep so you can get back to the party. They absolutely know, right? So just make it pleasant on yourself. Or maybe it's putting a baby in a stroller and going for a walk or something. Like whatever it is that feels vacation-y and good to you.
I love that. I really, really love that tip, actually. And that's so true. Your vacation is going to look different because you have an 18-month-old. But it doesn't mean that those quieter times that have to be around naps and bedtime have to be miserable for you. So I love that. That's such a good one. Okay. Solved that one. Moving on.
We're solved.
Okay, so we're going to play a question from Amber, and we'll listen to that now.
Hi, Megan and Sarah. This is Amber from Tacoma, Washington. And my question about vacation for you guys is, what are some contingency plans that you've had for when a child is just not having it? Meaning maybe they're overstimulated, maybe they're just off because they've been thrown out of their routine. Maybe every gift shop you go into, they're gimme, 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 I want this, I want that. When a kid is melting down or having a behavior problem, what are some plans that you have in place or things you've done maybe on the fly to deal with that and still have an enjoyable vacation? Thank you. I love your show and look forward to hearing your wisdom.
Okay, Amber. So all of the things you just described are going to happen. Every single one of them is absolutely going to happen. I don't know how old Amber's child or children are. But I guess the way I approached it was rather than like a contingency plan, it wasn't necessarily like a plan A, B, and C, but more like, let's get to the most important thing first. Like put that at like kind of front load the day with the thing that we really wanted to do, knowing that at any time, some things are probably going to fall off the list. So not overloading your schedule for one thing, but also just being willing at any time to just cut bait and go, you know?
Do you have any specific memories of like a cut bait moment? Oh. Not to put you on the spot, but.
Well, I mean, yes. One that comes to mind is I was in on Mackinac Island, which is an island, obviously. It doesn't have any cars on it. So everywhere you go, you have to walk. There's no jumping and like in an Uber if your kid flips out and you got to get back to the hotel. And our hotel was typically like, it's a place people walk around. And we had a day, and this is when we had like five little kids. Like I know Clara was born, but she was a baby, like little. It may have been like the fall after she was born. So she would have been 5 or 6 months old. And then Will was... We always used to joke that he could turn his body into lead when he was mad at us. He's like the most stubborn kid, but he could also make himself insanely heavy somehow. So anyways, Owen's like kind of in between and he was in a real stinker phase. And so there's all this activity. There's all these kids getting in and out of places. It's super stressful. We had spent the early part of the day at this fort, like an old timey, you know, historical fort where they do reenactments and stuff, which was really fun and cool. And then we decided to go, and I thought of this because of the gift shop gimme gimmies that Amber was talking about. We went into some, like, we were just kind of killing time. I don't remember what we were going to do next, maybe go to lunch or something. And we went into this gift shop and William really wanted, I want to say, a fake cigar. I can't remember now. It was either that or like a cap gun. Like, you know, when you go into those tour shops, they always had the same stuff. It was one of those things. And we had already, like, I just didn't want to buy it for him. I don't even remember why. Like, they all had a budget they could spend on whatever. And I didn't want to get him this one thing. And so he just sat down on the floor. And I think he was, gosh, he must have been 5, going on 6, almost 6. And we just, John and I just looked at each other and we're like, well, what are we going to do? We can't pick him up. Like, literally, he's made himself into magma. Like, he's like molten mercury or something. Like, he's basically just turned into this boneless sack on the floor. He's not crying. He's not saying, he's not screaming or doing anything. He's just not leaving. He won't move. And so we're all kind of uncertainly looking around. The other kids kind of wandered out into the street. Like, they're thinking, you know, mom and dad are about to lose it. So what do I do now? I want to say John had the stroller. Like, John had all the kids and Claire and the stroller out and on the sidewalk. And I'm sitting there reasoning with him. And that doesn't do anything. Nope. And I'm, you know, finally I'm like, well, I guess I have to leave you. And he called our bluff and we got very far, like very far, but there really wasn't, we didn't really have another choice. I mean, it was to the point where, like, I can't remember what we did. I want to say one of us hit around the corner or something. We didn't leave our 6-year-old, you know, and walk a mile, but it was like, we were making a point and he was making a point. And finally he kind of comes slumping out the door and following us. And then we went back to our hotel. And that was it for the day.
And you survived.
And we survived. We just knew that adding anything else on at that point was throwing good, you know, good vacation after bad.
Yeah. Fun for the sake of fun that isn't fun anymore.
Went to the pool. It was fine. We had a good time. We did venture back out at dinner. Like, everyone got a few hours. Everyone got a break, blah, blah, blah. So I guess the contingency for me is just, you know, just like, first of all, you can pick a simple thing. There's been times before when kids are losing their minds. We just go to a park and just sit at the park. Mm-hmm. And then the vacation becomes 2 hours at the park. Mm-hmm. There's times when we seek air conditioning if it's because everyone's getting grumpy and hot. So I think you kind of have to read it in the moment. But you just can't control it, right? Like, there's probably not a perfect plan that's going to save the day.
Yeah.
When it's getting really bad, except most likely end it.
Yes.
Pull the plug.
Just pull the cord. Okay. So I don't think I even have that much to add because I think you covered it all. I think one thing, if Amber needs this encouragement, and I can't remember, several listeners asked questions that involved being on vacation with extended family. And while Amber didn't necessarily, I'm going to put it here because I think it applies. And it also applies to the last question about sleep. If you're in a situation where there's other than your partner and your other children, like other extended family who are involved, it's very easy to feel like you're parenting in public on steroids, because it's not just public parenting with the strangers in the gift shop. It's also like your mother-in-law and, you know, your parents and all these other people. And so you get to kind of set the tone for what the day looks like. And I think a lot of these meltdowns, they can't all be avoided, but a lot of them can be lessened in severity if we're kind of doing that thing where we're keeping an eye on everybody's mood and like kind of sensing who needs a snack and who needs a nap. And you don't have to be afraid to cut the day short, like you said, Megan, and you can do it proactively, I guess, if I have a point, that's what it is. Like, you can say, you know what, we're not up for the full day. We're going to take a separate car so that we can go back early if we need to. And I have done that so many times when there's extended family involved. And the nice thing is, I think people, we worry about being judged or being, you know, we don't want people to think we don't want to have fun or be with them. I think in general, people are more understanding than you think and probably care less than you think about exactly who, like, they just want to enjoy their vacation as
well. Exactly. If you can't be there, it's like, okay, we'll see them tomorrow.
Right. So going back to what I said about if you can be on the same page as your partner and kind of be as a team, like, hey, we're just going to do this afternoon instead. So anytime there's that dynamic, I think the stakes just feel that much more emotional. But I don't think you don't need to be afraid of just saying, hey, we're going to cut it short or we're going to opt out of that. And I don't think they'll hate you. I don't think it'll ruin anybody's vacation. So in case anybody needed to hear that.
Agreed.
All right, we are to our last question, and it comes from Kayla.
Hi, Megan and Sarah. I was wondering if either of you have any advice about budgeting for vacation.
When we decided that I'd stay home with our daughter, we had to make some sacrifices. We haven't had an actual vacation since 2014. I dream about going to the beach, but it feels like it's going to be a while. We haven't always been the most financially responsible, so we're working to pay down our debts and build up a savings. Vacationing anytime soon just seems like a splurge. But if we could find some strategies to make it a part of our plan, we may be able to swing it. How do you plan for vacation costs and such?
Okay, Kayla, I know where you are. Because I'm also doing some digging and financially getting myself in shape right now, which means like a real vacation, the way we think of a vacation, is not in the cards for me this year, which is not to say I'm not going to get away. And I think that maybe that's where I'd start. I'm not sure where you live. When you say you want to go to the beach, I don't know if that's like, you know, a flight, a day trip. Like, I don't know what that means for you. And also I don't know if how broadly you think about a beach. So does an inland lake count as a beach? Does, you know what I mean?
Right.
Could it be something that is maybe not in a beautiful, well-known tourist beach area? I just think like when you are doing this kind of thing, there's so many ways to have a trip and there's so many ways to go on vacation. And it's not always like usually going past the most obvious choice and digging more gets you a better deal. So depending on how deeply you're cutting, I'm sure you can probably make something happen. It's hard to say because I've been on vacations that have cost a couple hundred dollars and I've been on vacations that have cost thousands of dollars. And it's really, you know, like I don't plan when I'm making like my yearly budget in, you know, January. I'm not like, okay, this year I'm going on 4 vacations and they're going to cost this much money each. I'm just not in a place right now where I can do that. So for me, it's more like this opportunity has come up to do this thing generally with another family. Cause I think there's ways to cut costs, mm-hmm. to share housing and things like that. Am I interested? Can I make it work? And then I take a look and see. But I don't know. Like, Sarah, do you have any thoughts about that? I'm thinking you guys probably because your income maybe is a little more stable. Maybe you guys do that.
We have
planning ahead of time.
Yes and no. So I've mentioned before, so many of our quote unquote vacations over the last 10 years have been, 95% of them have been travel to see extended family. And for the most part, we love that. But it's not quite the same as going on a capital V vacation with just our family where we're paying for accommodations, we're looking for fun things to do. That's where it really adds up. Often for us, flights are the most expensive. And so for that, we do have a separate bank account, a separate savings account that physically we move money in once a month. So we look at our annual travel budget and it's an estimate. But we know that we go to Rhode Island every other year. We know that we, you know, for a while we were going to Tahoe every year. We kind of look at the 12-month cost divided by, or look at the annual cost divided by 12 and start setting aside that for flights so that the flights themselves, which can be, it could be $2,000 to fly my family somewhere. So that's not such a blow. So that is one thing we've done. And when I did my interview with Natalie Taylor, a few weeks ago about, you know, budgeting and saving. And that was one of her tips as well. And I think that could work no matter what kind of vacation or travel you were hoping for. It could be $10 a month or $100 a month that you're setting aside, but having it be separate and saving up. And I also think you could do that savings without having a specific vacation in mind. You just could be having it like the old, you know, the old jar that sits on the counter and that you drop spare change into or whatever. And then it's for a someday vacation. But for us, it's usually been for airline tickets, which are by far the most expensive. So
that makes sense. And my family travel has mostly been car rides, which gives you a lot more control, right? I mean, because you don't have to go as far.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just not as expensive. Eating out has probably been more our expense that we really have to watch out for.
I wonder for Kayla, if just the practice of setting a date for a quote unquote vacation and maybe adjusting expectations a little bit about what that entails. You know, the very first question we took from Jesse about creating your family culture around vacation, it kind of revealed that we all have this mental image of like, what is a vacation? Is it always Cabo on spring break? Because that's what you grew up with. So I almost feel like she and her husband and daughter would probably really enjoy, it could be a staycation. It could be, so maybe it's as simple as requesting a couple days off of work for her partner and having a modest savings goal and just doing something really small to kind of practice what that feels like. It sounds like they're really committed to paying down debt and living, you know, really frugally. But I think like any financial decision, when you decide that it's a priority and that it's in the budget and that it's a value. Yeah. I talked with Natalie Taylor. She talked a lot about, you know, budgeting according to your values. If a vacation once a year to take a break and hit pause on your busy work life is a value, then you just have to figure out how to make that happen. And I think it can be done fairly inexpensively. So almost, I feel like I would just advise, like, do a practice vacation, do something small that's achievable and see how it feels to save up a little bit of money, take a couple of days off of work and just do it.
I love that. And also I think that what that really highlights for me is the first question to ask is, you know, what is it you want to get out of, like, what is it you're like trying to achieve with this vacation? Because if you haven't gone anywhere in 5 years, maybe you just feel restless and trapped.
Yeah.
Is it warmth that you need?
Like, that's a good point.
Is it relaxation? Is it a feeling of doing something with like your little family unit, just the three of you, that feels special? Like, there's so many ways to scratch different itches. If you know what the itch really is.
Yeah.
You got to know where the itch is before you can scratch it, right?
I think so, that's so good.
That's a good place to start. And then the other thing I was going to say that ties in with what you were just saying, Sarah, is like, once you've kind of set that, like taken the days off, do some research, see what it is you actually need to do to achieve whatever that goal is, like whatever you're trying to achieve out of this. It's always amazing to me when I really get clear about what I need to be able to do something.
Yeah.
How, and you know, putting money aside for a year is great, but it's hard. Like if it's vague, it's really hard to get excited about it.
Yeah, I agree.
And there's always, if you're on a tight budget, something else will always come up to eat that money. Mm-hmm. But if you know that in 3 months, you're going to spend $500 to go stay in a hotel for 2 nights near the beach, someplace that's within a drive and not too ridiculous. Let's just throw that out there. Mm-hmm. It's always interesting to see how much more deeply I can sacrifice if I see the thing I'm going for, or I have a yard sale and, or I sell some stuff I forgot that I had, or someone works some overtime or I pick up some babysitting job, something like that. Like, there's always a way to reach that short-term financial goal if you see it and you know exactly what it is. And I think that's what's missing right now, is that knowing exactly what you're trying to do.
Yeah. And she asked at the end of her message, just planning for the costs and stuff. And I think if you were starting small like this, you'd be able, they'd be fairly known. The bigger you get, the more those numbers get hard to plan for, and the bigger your family gets. I mean, going out to eat is so different now than when we had one toddler. But I feel like, and you might even look at things like Great Wolf Lodge or some of these like all-inclusive type things where the costs, maybe it's not your dream vacation, but the costs might be more predictable. And if what you're looking for is something where it's not going to stress you out because unexpected, this meal costs this much more than we thought and all that. And if the goal is to keep it really, you know, right on budget, you could look at something like that where you, the costs are pretty fixed. They're pretty predictable what you're going to spend. It's going to be this much gas to get there and this much a night and, you know, this little
and even budget. Something like we spent a lot of time at Great Wolf Lodges when my kids were little. And for all the reasons you just described, it was like the one place we could show up with our enormous family. And if we were willing to not eat in the restaurant every night, which will kill you.
Yeah.
And just go to our room, which is in the same building.
Yeah.
Like just walk up to our room and make a sandwich. Or ordering pizza or whatever it is. And it doesn't have to be Great Wolf. It could be a hotel with a pool.
Yeah.
That just happens to be far enough away from you that you feel like you're going somewhere. There's so many ways to do it really inexpensively. So you need to know what you're getting yourself into before you can start planning. But then once you know and make the plan, I think you can do it.
I think you can do it too. Also, I have to say that I've never been to Great Wolf Lodge. And I kind of missed, I mean, no, I think my kids would still really like it now, but I really want to go. And I've heard they're really fun and I wish they
would. Oh, no, your kids are at the butter age right now.
Yeah. Because no one would drown. And,
and they're all old enough to go on all the big things, which you wouldn't want to go with Violet's personality. I don't think you would want to go. She might still be a little too small for like the biggest one, but I think it would be bummer to take her at like 3.
Yeah.
And she has to stay in the baby area the whole time. I just don't feel like that would fly with her.
No, that would not fly with her.
And now what would be great is Allegra would feel like so grown up.
Yeah.
To be able to take her like little sibling on the slide and you don't have to go on every single slide every single time, which is nice too.
I really would like them to sponsor our podcast. So if anyone's listening who works
for anyone's a representative for Great Wolf Lodge, we did not plan this.
No, I really do want to go there for real. Okay. So Kayla, you will have to keep us posted about what you put together for a little vacation. You deserve one. Okay, we are going to wrap up and do our Cue It Up segment. And that is where we recommend something for you guys to listen to next. If you have been listening recently, you know, we've shifted gears from sending you back into our archives. And we are taking this chance to talk about some of our fellow podcasters and recommend a show you might like to listen to. So I'm excited because we're going to talk about Edit Your Life, which I know a lot of you already listened to. But next week, we are doing a host swap with Asha and Christine from the Edit Your Life show. So they've both been on our show as Voices guests before, actually Asha twice. And many of you are already listening to their show. But if you haven't, now would be a great time to check out Edit Your Life and subscribe, because next week I will be on there talking with Christine about work from home productivity hacks.
Love it.
And then here on the Mom Hour, Asha is going to take my seat, and you and Asha are going to be talking about siblings, bringing home a new sibling, and then how sibling dynamics change. I got to listen to that before The Real World, and I thought it was such a good conversation. So you guys can find the Edit Your Life podcast at edityourlifeshow.com or wherever you listen to our show. Just look for theirs, and then keep listening all the way to the end of today's episode, and you'll hear a little more from Asha and Christine in their own words.
Okay, well, thanks to everybody who sent in questions. We always love to hear your voices. So if you have a question for us, you can just record yourself talking if you'd like and email hello@themomhour and then put listener question in the subject line. Or you can always record your voice easily from your computer or phone at speakpipe.com/themomhour. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Well, hello there. I'm Christine Coe.
And I'm Asha Dornfest, and we're the hosts of the Edit Your Life show, a podcast where we help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome.
We share practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection.
And we help you take action with doable baby steps that will leave you feeling accomplished instead of overwhelmed.
Our show covers everything from parenting to food to work to home to self-care to finances to relationships, through our own conversations and experiences, as well as expert interviews.
To learn more about our show, head to edityourlifeshow.com, follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Edit Your Life Show, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
The Mom Hour is supported by partners like Erica. Erica is the social media health app for teens that gives them the tools to unplug when they need to for improved health, study focus, sleep, and daily balance.
Erica was built by a dad of three boys who saw that teens themselves were really becoming self-aware to the risks of social media, and he wanted to help them self-regulate. Erica works to hide distracting apps from your phone at the touch of a button, keeping them out of sight and out of mind without deleting your data.
Tell your teens about Erica and save 20% on the Erica family plan with promo code THEMOMHOUR. Go to erica.app and search for plans. That's Erica with a K, Erika.app, and use code THEMOMHOUR to save 20%. Hi, everyone. Megan here. Sarah and I would absolutely love it if you would hit pause right now, like right where you're listening, and leave The Mom Hour a rating and review. If our show has helped you feel a little more confident as a mom or a little less alone, this is one of the biggest ways you can thank us, and it really only takes about 30 seconds. If you're listening to Apple Podcasts, you can navigate to the Mom Hour's show listing. So when you're in the episode you're listening to right now, click where it says The Mom Hour just above the play button, and then scroll all the way to the bottom and you will see the ratings and reviews. We would love if you would leave us one as well. Thank you so much for listening.